Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Be sure to stick around for a rundown of the latest stories happening here in the Chicago area at the very end of this podcast. Now, let's turn to the conversation you clicked on. For families living with dementia, simple outings like taking a ride on the train or visiting a coffee shop can bring anxiety, awkward moments, and the overwhelming feeling that you have to explain your situation to strangers. But across the Chicago area, dozens of so-called memory cafes are working to change that. These free gatherings, inside public spaces like libraries and the zoo, they're designed for people living with memory loss and the people who care for them. In this episode of the pod, we'll hear from a pair of organizers and a Chicagoan who attends with his mother about the sense of community and understanding that these memory cafes create for participants. At the table was Molly Conley, who's executive director of The Village Chicago, which connects Chicagoans over 50. She also coordinates the memory cafe at the Lincoln Park Library. Susan Frick is a social worker with Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center and Dementia Friendly Illinois. That's an initiative that promotes memory cafes and educational programming. And Bob Cantino is a caregiver who goes to the memory cafe at his local library with his mother. First, we'll hear from Bob, who tells us about his mom named Vivian.
She's the best mom in the world.
Aww. What does she love to do?
So Vivian loves music. At one point, she was studying to be an opera singer.
Oh, wow.
So music still really resonates with her. She raised six of us and gave us such a memorable childhood with very little resources. We weren't, rich by any means. But as we grew up, we decided mom would always have a home with one of us. And that has been true.
Mm-hmm.
And so my turn came in 2019.
And so she's living with you
she's
now?
She's living with me.
What's that caregiver journey been like? Because now she's living with memory loss too.
That's correct. So she was already experiencing some memory loss in 2019 when she came with me.
Do you remember what that looked like in the beginning? How did it appear?
Yeah, in the beginning, she was still fairly independent. I was working full-time and juggling caregiving, so I had hired caregivers to come in mostly for companionship, 3 days a week, and then 2 days she was on her own, and so she could use her phone, she could, use the microwave, she was able to keep herself entertained.
I see.
But fast forward to the pandemic, and there was a sharp decline after the pandemic. To the point where she needed assistance with all the activities of daily living and became a little resistant to caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made the call in 2024 to retire early from my 35-year career.
Wow.
To focus on caring for mom. And tough decision, yes, but so rewarding. I'm so glad I did it. In retrospect, I probably couldn't have planned it any better way.
Yeah.
To retire with that sort of focus and mission.
I can only imagine the conversations back then, right? As you were trying to figure out how to navigate this whole thing and how you would have to make a huge sacrifice for mom. How did you stumble on memory cafes?
Yep. So in 2024, mom had a brief stay in the hospital. And part of the aftercare was PT, OT, and a social worker that came into the house. And the social worker shared some resources, numbers and organizations. And one of the things was a memory cafe. Now, I felt pretty confident with the care. It was the physical care, the safe space I was providing.
Mm-hmm.
The one missing piece for me was social interaction.
Ah, yes.
Vivian, as the name suggests, vivacious.
yes.
And she always loved socializing, tea parties, all of that. And me, a self-professed introvert, was sort of, not.
You're like, how do I help her with that?
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Not my expertise.
So I saw the memory cafe and I called. And called in advance before we went, because I wanted to understand if, you know, what it was all about. And one of the first questions I asked was, can we leave early? This was my nervousness about, you know, going
to one of those. Yeah. Well, let's hear from our friends here at the table. Molly, let me turn to you. Take us inside a Memory Cafe event. What happens and how do you create that welcoming space?
Well, thanks for having me here. And Bob, you just gave me an idea because I don't think we've done a Tea Party Memory Cafe.
So Mom would love it.
We'll have to do that next. Really, it's an answer to the isolation that happens. Memory cafes are that answer to isolation and an opportunity for friendship and hopefully a little joy in a small group. I think a lot of great things can happen in small groups. And so it's a welcoming space. It's inclusive, non-judgmental. We partner, and many memory cafes partner with community organizations, as you mentioned, like libraries.
Yes.
Welcoming spaces, accessible. And it does depend on the memory cafe, what it looks like. Ours, in particular, at the Chicago Public Library, Lincoln Park branch, we have lunch. And then we have an activity. Sometimes it's music, sometimes puzzles, and just an opportunity for not just those living with memory loss, but their caregivers and also allies, people that might have parents or loved ones that live out of town that want to understand more, maybe what the journey is for that person that has memory loss. And just to ask some questions.
Well, I'm already making the connection, right? Because it makes, you know, it helps participants like Bob, the introvert, socialize
exactly.
more.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's helping both Bob and Vivian, right? What's the feedback that you're getting from folks who have come to check out the Lincoln Park Memory Cafe?
You know, a lot of just that, just relaxed.
Sigh of relief.
Exactly. I didn't realize how much I needed this. And I'm thinking back to a few of recently, and one was, you know, someone that just had a lot of questions and was just thank you so much. And, you know, you don't have to register if you know, because as we know, sometimes day to day is always different. So it's encouraged, but you don't have to register. They're free.
Mm-hmm.
You can drop in. You can leave early and it's welcoming and it's all about friendship.
Yeah. Susan, talk about why people with dementia and their caregivers are at risk of experiencing that social isolation.
You know, so I've been working at the Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center 29 years, and we sure have heard from both people living with dementia and their caregivers how isolating this illness can be, and that there's, I think, stigma. And I think a lot of community members, I think, want to stay engaged, but just with people, but aren't sure what to do, because sometimes way a person converses or a way a person interacts can be slightly different, and it can make people uncomfortable.
And I think I don't think that many people would understand that caregivers are also at risk of this. So I want you to dig more into that, because of course you understand sort of, you know, why the person dealing with the memory loss might be a little excluded from other events that are happening. But why does this also sort of trickle onto the person taking care of them?
I think because we actually have a painting done from the expression of caregivers saying that as they are a caregiver, their social circles get smaller and smaller. And it shows these circles getting tinier to just the person with dementia and the caregiver. And I think it's because people don't know how to ask or don't know what to say. And so having memory cafes and having communities, we became involved at Rush and with the Dementia Friendly Initiative in the state of Illinois, helping communities think about what are some small things they could do to support people who are living with dementia or their caregivers and help educate the community. And so we actually have the most designated communities in the entire state of all states in the country. We have 52 communities. We have 10 in Chicago.
Wow.
And then 20 in the surrounding areas around Chicago. And then often what these communities will do is develop memory cafes. So they're not only in dementia-friendly communities, but they're in a lot of them. And it's just helping to create that space where people can go and feel part of a community and not feel, I've had caregivers say, I love being able to come to something like this because I don't have to explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is okay.
That dementia-friendly umbrella, I just want you to quickly make sure we're all on the same page here. This is, you know,
so that within the community, I guess all folks can sort of recognize a little easier, a little quicker that someone may be experiencing something and you may need to go easy on them. You may need to be a bit more patient when you're in line, you know, walking through a CTA station and they take a second to get their Ventra card ready. Is it?
Exactly.
Moments like that?
It is. And so dementia-friendly communities are just places that have decided we want to make this an effort for our neighborhood and to help people to be able to be still as involved as they can be for as long as possible.
Right.
And then within dementia-friendly, there's another initiative, which is the individual initiative called Dementia Friends. And people can become a dementia friend online or hear a talk, but that's encouraging people to realize why is it important as just a person to stay connected to people or to be involved. And dementia-friendly communities are also helping people become a dementia friend.
So, Bob, tell me, how much does Vivian light up when she's at these memory cafes? You must be watching her closely to see her reaction. What's it doing for her?
Absolutely. So the first one, I was a little tentative, as I mentioned, but almost immediately we get seated and she sees the seniors across from her and her face lights up. I always keep my phone handy because I snap pictures and the producer maybe shared some. I wish I could show Radioland those pictures.
Beautiful photos.
Yeah.
I saw
and
them.
And she just lights up. And the content really is sort of secondary. It's great. We love the content. She especially responds to the music content, but she just enjoys being out there among people.
Mm.
And everyone is so friendly. They are dementia friendly. And so they just instinctively know how to approach. They come and get on her level and, you know, are happy to see her and kind of get into her focus area.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, they come one at the volunteers are great about coming one at a time and
not overwhelming her.
Yeah. And using her name. And so it's really a great atmosphere for her.
What's it doing for you personally?
Yeah. And so, you know, I initially started for Vivian, right? This is her social, but didn't realize how much it would expand for me and how much I would look forward to it. For one, you know, seeing her light up lights me up. And then we've made some great friends. We made friends with residents and workers at Hartwell Place, which is a memory care community. And they have invited us to their social activities.
Nice.
And so ice cream socials, walks, et cetera. They have a day camp respite program that we've availed to. Because once I saw how they loved Vivian, I'm like, okay, I'm comfortable leaving her for a little bit with her. And then through the Memory Cafe also, through the organizers, I was asked to be part of a neighborhood collective that is trying to increase dementia-friendly in our neighborhoods.
So I want you, Molly, and you, Bob, to sort of tell folks about some upcoming events at the Edgewater and the Lincoln Park Libraries, in case they're interested.
So,
you first, Molly.
Our Memory Cafe is every fourth Friday. And like I mentioned, we have lunch. So that's always a good starting point, every Memory Cafe, and they are all different. Not everyone has lunch. So that's upcoming. We do plan on having a music therapist join, and we are still planning to do some small flower pot arranging, if we get to that, at one of the upcoming Memory Cafes. And just ongoing, really, encouragement for everyone to become a dementia friend, to go on Dementia Friendly America. .org and anyone can become a dementia friend. It's just a 1 hour training that you can do online.
And Susan, if people are interested in learning more about a memory cafe near them, where can they find more information? And where can they find more information about the classes that you offer as well to get folks more educated on dementia?
We have we are part of a group that runs what's called the Illinois Cognitive Resources Network. And so our website is ilbrainhealth.org, which is for illinoisbrainhealth.org. It has a lot of material on there for people who are living with dementia, for their family members or people around them. It has all the information about dementia-friendly communities, which you could go see if your neighborhood is already designated, and if it's not, you can sure reach out to us and we would help. And it has information about a directory for the memory cafes, too.
Nice. I want to give you the last word, Bob, because there are people listening who might have a diagnosis, right? Or they might be a caregiver or a care partner. What do you want to say to them?
Yeah, I would say take the plunge. It's probably not a plunge for everyone, but make the call and check it out. Because we found a very welcoming community for both of us and a chance to then spread that joy outside of the Memory Cafe and to help others who are going through the journey.
We'll leave it there. Bob Contino goes to the Memory Cafe with his mother, Vivian. Molly Conley coordinates a Memory Cafe in Lincoln Park Library. And Susan Frick is a social worker with Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center and Dementia Friendly Illinois, an initiative that oversees memory cafes and educational programming. Thank you all so much.
Thank you,
Sasha.
Thank you
so much.
Turn to the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. We checked in with WBEZ midday anchor Lisa Labas and WBEZ State House reporter Mawa Iqbal, who joined us from Springfield. We started with how things went for everyone over the long holiday weekend. Lisa went first.
I actually was downstate for a couple of days at my mother-in-law's place. She passed away a good year ago, but we're cleaning out her house, sorting things, getting ready for a big estate sale. So it was a lot of big feelings, a lot of laughter, a lot of great memories
in
that house. You know, that woman kept everything.
So it was really wonderful, though.
It was really enjoyable and a lot of hard work.
Yeah. Mawa, how about you?
Yeah, I, you know, I kind of just took this weekend to relax and kind of recharge my batteries for what's going to be a pretty crazy week at the State House this week. So just reading in the park a lot, taking naps throughout the day,
yes.
You know, all that good stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I took yesterday to do exactly what you just described, Mawa. I just, you know, recharged, relaxed, we grilled a little bit, but... You know, that's because I was on the heels of a very busy weekend. My kid turned 18. I guess he's not a kid anymore, right?
Well, so, you know, two steps forward, one step back toward adulthood, I think.
And we also had her graduation ceremony the day before. So it was just a busy time in our household.
Aw, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. So here's the thing, Lisa. When that good weather hits, typically, so does an increase in violence, unfortunately.
Ma'am.
In Chicago, of course. Saw that. We saw multiple teen takeovers over the weekend. We saw shootings. Fill us in.
Yeah. So if it's good news, I don't know. It's sort of tempered good news,
yeah.
But the police reports are showing that the city has seen the fewest fatal shootings during a Memorial Day weekend in 16 years. 26 people, the Sun-Times reports, were shot and injured over the holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Just one person died, but this death is just awful. A 2-year-old boy shot himself. He was in the Pullman neighborhood over the weekend. His name is Jamonte Shaw. He was taken to Comer Children's Hospital and initially listed in critical condition, but then he died. And there is a 31-year-old man has been arrested in connection with that case, but no charges. Yeah,
so tragic, though.
I know. And for anybody to get shot and injured is just horrible. So, you know, we still have this gun violence.
It was just a very random case of events. You know, I was looking through some of the details of the different shootings that happened, you know, between Saturday and Sunday. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of the victims were shot in the leg.
Right.
Oddly enough, did you see that?
Yeah, there was
shot in the arm,
incident.
Shot in the leg.
Right,
and I was like, what is happening?
I don't know. But, you know, thank God that they're
of
not,
course.
You know, that they're alive. And, you know, it's still awful. But there was one incident. I think it was a graduation party where 4 teenagers were shot at the same time on the
mm-hmm.
south side. It's just beyond.
And like you said, I mean, it still may have been the least deadly Memorial Day weekend in what, about 16 years?
Right. It doesn't make it any easier, though, frankly.
Yeah.
So
police say no charges have been announced in that case that you mentioned with
correct.
The toddler. shooting himself. During the same weekend last year, 25 people were shot in the city, saw 4 fatalities. So right. I guess that's why the comparison there in numbers. Over to you, Mawa. Illinois' senior U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, he's in his last few months in office, but he's still kind of pushing for change here, particularly when it comes to the death penalty. What should we know?
Yeah, so basically, Senator Durbin is reintroducing a bill that he's tried pushing for this for a few years now, but it basically would end the federal death penalty, and it would also require the resentencing of those who are currently on death row in federal prison. So this comes as the Department of Justice recently announced efforts to actually do the opposite and bolster the death penalty, you know, like bringing back firing squads, to just really, really extreme measures. Durbin's proposal does face some pretty steep challenges, just given that currently they're in a Republican-controlled Congress. But it's interesting to note that in Illinois, you know, Illinois lawmakers passed a ban on Illinois' death penalty back in 2015. It was mm-hmm. signed by Governor Pat Quinn. And it was seen as a very transformative piece of legislation, right? And it's something that, you know, a lot of advocates, criminal justice advocates, including Senator Durbin, say that, you know, that this system is punitive. It also, you know, costs taxpayers a lot of money to keep people who are on death row right? It costs taxpayers a lot of money. So, you know, rather something so punitive, like let's do something more transformative and more on the restorative justice, I guess, angle. So, yeah, we'll see where that goes. But
mm-hmm. one to watch for sure. And speaking of Capitol Hill, Lisa, Chicago Alder is actually making his bid for Congress official today.
Oh, yeah. So Chicago Alder person Byron Sigcho Lopez, 25th Ward Alder. This is the Pilsen Little Village, University Village neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He is heading down to Springfield to officially file to run for Congress. He says he's going to the State Board of Elections headquarters to file those nominating petitions. He is running as an independent in the district currently held by Jesus Chuy Garcia. This is the
fourth
district.
So not as
district.
A Democrat.
No, an independent, right? So he, you know, this district is one of those weird shaped ones. It's sort of, I don't know, it looks like a weird duck. If you take a look at the map, it's got Midway Airport, Oak Brook, some south side, some west side, some western suburbs. Meantime, you've got, you know, Chuy Garcia's chief of staff, Patty Garcia, running as a Democrat.
Now, Mawa, you are actually in Springfield right now, and you are incredibly busy following the spring legislative session. Now, this ends on May 31st. Tell us how you would describe the last few months, though.
Oh, quite boring, I would say.
No wonder you needed to recharge over the weekend.
Right, from all the inaction that's been happening. Well, you know, it's interesting because I think anyone who covers state politics knows that in Illinois, the lawmakers do love to wait until the last minute to do very big, very consequential things. So, you know, it's not like in the past few months, lawmakers just haven't been doing anything. They've been passing a wide variety of very interesting bills. It's just all the big ones, right? So like the state budget, you know, this package addressing AI, mm-hmm. The Bears stadium bill, like these bills that we all know are bubbling under the surface. They're being talked about. Lawmakers are meeting behind closed doors to hash over, you know, the details. Mm-hmm. We know that these bills will get introduced and moved and debated on probably towards the end of the session. And I mean like the very, very, very end.
Right. You mean in
that's
6
how
days?
It's always been. That's right. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. So definitely on May 31st at, you know, 8 p.m. at night is probably when we'll see them on the floor. So you know, it's part of it's just because these bills are often contentious. So lawmakers do want to take their time and negotiate with all the different stakeholders involved. But also it is part of a strategy where if you just ram bills through at the very last minute, you know, sort of at under the cover of darkness at mm-hmm. like 4 in the morning, no one's really watching and paying attention. You have more leeway to push sometimes more controversial things forward.
I see. So the top items that you're paying attention to then sound like, as you mentioned, that AI bundle, the data centers, you know, everybody loves a data center, and the Bears. Where are the Bears going to land?
Right. And it's a question. You know, my colleague, Tinas Vandellas over at the Sun-Times, did talk to Senator Cunningham, Bill Cunningham. He's from Chicago, but he's also carrying this proposal that would essentially incentivize the Bears to build in Arlington Heights. It's a tax plan, right? And he says that right now it's kind of a coin toss. He told Tina that basically there's some opposition from Chicago area lawmakers who really, really, really want the Bears to stay in the city. And that this is something that Chicago Mayor Johnson has also been pushing for last week, and even gotten a little like tit for tat with Pritzker on it, because Pritzker is out here saying, you know, we need to keep the Bears in Illinois, and they've already said they're not going to build in Chicago, that they're going to build in Arlington Heights.
Right.
So let's focus on that, guys. But so it's running up against some opposition in these final days, and I'll be very curious to see if they're able to overcome that.
And that May 31st deadline that we're talking about, I mean, what happens if they don't pass the budget by then? I'm curious.
Well, they can extend. They'd have to pass a budget, I believe, by the end of June, but after May 31st, it becomes a lot more difficult to pass a budget. They would need, because right now you just need a simple majority after May 31st, which is their own self-imposed deadline too. By the way, they were the ones who were like, we need to end the session on May 31st.
Right.
But if they were to go past it, then it would they would need a higher vote threshold to pass anything.
Lisa, are you following the bouncing ball?
You know, I am so tired of the Bears, but so part of me is thinking,
but you can't look away.
Right, you can't. It's like a big car crash that you just can't look away. So I half sort of, you know, expect that, you know, lawmakers will come back and the Bears will come back and say, surprise, we're staying at Soldier Field and here's what we're going to do. But I don't think that's happening. But with all the ups and downs and the starts and stops, who knows what's going to happen? So that's interesting to me. I'm super interested in what the legislature has up their sleeves about AI. That's personally interesting to me.
It's a hot topic.
It really is. I have no idea what they're going to do. Also, data centers and how much energy gets used for that. You know, that means...
And water, too.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. So Mawa, that's what I'm watching.
You talked, Mawa, about what's likely to see some movement. What's likely to pass? Any big items that you think might get left on the table?
Yeah, so as far as what's likely to pass, I would put my money on this AI bundle, actually. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's a lot of momentum behind it. It's been moving. It was filed, I think, last week or a couple weeks ago. It's kind of hard to keep track of time down here.
What is time?
What it, if not, but a social construct anyways. So the AI bundle has seen a lot of momentum, forward momentum. It's like a package of bills that this group of Senate Democrats are pushing forward. And essentially what it does, it does a lot of things, but sort of the landmark portions of this package are that it would require AI companies like ChatGPT and Claude to contract with like a third party entity to do independent reviews of what they're doing to mitigate risks when it comes to how people are using their open AI services. For example, are people able to search up how to build a nuclear weapon, right? And what sort of things are these companies doing to make sure that that's not happening?
Yeah.
Then there's a bunch of other provisions on like how landlords can't use AI to set rent prices, how school districts can't use AI to grade students, how teens should not be using AI to, you know, look up ways to harm themselves if they're struggling with mental health, you know, issues.
And
so that one seems like it's getting some positive momentum. I can see that one passing for sure, especially in these last few days. Bear Stadium, you know, there's a lot of political will to pass it, right?
Something needs to happen. That's all I have to say.
Something needs to happen. Yeah, and I want to say that the governor especially does not want to be known as the governor that lost the Bears to Indiana, especially when he's looking for a third term and potentially a presidential run in 2028. So
sure,
we have that as well. Data centers, I will say that might get left on the table. I mean, anything is possible in Springfield, right? Like even if a bill hasn't seen action in the past few months, it's very well possible that it could see action in these last few days. But, you know, what I've heard is that there's a lot of opposition from municipalities over this data center bill. And sort of the rule around here is that if the municipalities are against, then it's not going to really
go. And real quick, another one that you've been following closely is this pair of bills that focus on insurance rate reform. If passed, what would these bills do, Mama?
Yeah, so these bills, one of them is an auto insurance rate reform. The other is a home insurance rate reform. And these, both of these efforts have been sort of brewing in Springfield for a few years now. The home insurance one was especially, it's seen sort of like a new light, especially after State Farm, I believe last summer, jacked up the home insurance premiums by around 25-27%.
Yes.
And Governor Pritzker came out saying, like, this is crazy. You know, like we as a state need to have more oversight into what these insurance companies are doing. And so essentially these two bills would give the Department of Insurance regulatory power over auto and home insurance rate increases. Basically, they'll have the power to accept or deny rate increases, and they can deny an increase if they deem it to be too high, too mm-hmm. discriminatory, too excessive. So, you know, you have like public interest groups like the Illinois Public Interest Research Group that's all for this. You have a lot of like progressive Democrats that are for this. Of course, the insurance groups are totally against it.
Of course.
But, you know, both of these bills, the home insurance one just needs one more vote from the House to pass, while the auto insurance one needs full consideration from the House. So both bills are in the House. Well, we'll see what happens. But it would be pretty huge if they do get passed. Well,
in a few minutes here on In the Loop, we're actually going to do a full breakdown. We'll hear from two people on either side of the issue about what this really means for you. So stay tuned for that conversation, folks. Before we let you go, Lisa, sad news. One of the last jazz greats has died. Yeah. Someone who lived for a long time here in Chicago.
Well, not a very long time, actually. He was from New York. Sonny Rollins, you're talking about. He died. He was 95 years old. He died in Woodstock, New York. But he spent a little bit of time here in Chicago and did play with a lot of Chicago musicians. So this in 1955, I believe, is what I read, that he lived on the South Side for a little while. And he really, what I read was that he really treasured his time here in Chicago while he worked to battle heroin addiction. And he said he defeated the dragon. He told Neil Tesser with the Reader that that was his biggest achievement here in Chicago. But while he was here, he joined one of the big seminal quintets of the 50s, the Clifford Brown and Max Roach Quintet. And then so he left Chicago to go travel with them to New York. He met his wife here. Mm. He would go listen to Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf play on 47th Street. He was the last surviving adult musician pictured in that 1958 photograph, A Great Day in Harlem.
Oh, nice.
So I know that very is cool. a the end of an era there.
End of an era. A great moment in history, that photo that you're talking about there. Rest in peace, Sonny. And before we let you go, Mawa, tell us what other stories you might be following.
The only other thing I can think of is there's a renewed effort by lawmakers to push for hemp regulation in Illinois. That this is something that failed a couple sessions ago, just given fierce opposition from brewing companies, like people who make beers that have hemp in them. So we'll see. I mean, this is sort of like an 11th hour kind of last minute sort of filing where they dropped the bills last week. But it's a combined House and Senate effort. So we'll see if that transpires into anything fruitful, I guess.
WBEZ's Mawa Iqbal and Lisa Lavis.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.